You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 139. Filmmaking is the ultimate team sport. Michael Keaton.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie is going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T, chart. I hope you guys are ready for some inspiration today, because today's guest is Elizabeth Blake Thomas, who is a writer, producer, director, who has just directed 6 feature films in 2 years. And the kicker is, she didn't go to film school. She didn't know anything about the film industry per se before she got into it, though she had been around the entertainment industry for 30-odd years in plays and working with actors and things like that. But she had never shot a feature film or even a short film. And she just hit the ground running, learned what she needed to learn, and started making movies. And not only did she make movies, she had, these aren't like movies that she pulled, you know, $5 out of her pocket to make. She had them financed and sold, and continues to make more and more movies. And if that's not enough, she has 2 or 3 feature films in prep as we speak that she's going to shoot back to back. And we'll get more into that in our conversation. But I really, yeah, I heard this story and I reached out to Elizabeth because I was like, I got to get her on the show. I got to get this inspirational story to the tribe, because I want you guys to understand you can't put obstacles in front of you. You can go out and do it, and it doesn't matter if you're not educated in filmmaking. You learn along the way. As long as you have the will to learn, you can make it happen. Please enjoy my conversation with Elizabeth Blake Thomas. I'd like to welcome to the show Elizabeth Blake Thomas. Thank you so, so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Alex. It's an absolute treat. A treat to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And if the tribe, if you hear some noise in the background, it's because Elizabeth is literally hustling on the streets of Hollywood as we speak. So you might hear some things in the background.
I am. Do you know what? That's one of the wonderful aspects of being in this industry, isn't it? We never know where we're going to be. Mm-hmm. And today I happen to be on the streets hustling.
Right. And you're going meeting to meeting. Jumping, yes. Meeting to meeting. So yes. That's awesome. So I wanted to have you on the show because I read an article about you on Stage 32 about how you were able to make 6 feature films in 2 years, which is a feat in itself. So that's the reason why I wanted to bring you on the show, because I wanted to hear your story. And you have a very unique story and a very unique background. So before we get started, first of all, how did you get into the film industry in the first place?
Well, I was a theatre director back in the UK. I ran my own theatre company from about 16 years old. And I love that side of things. I love characters. I love actors. But I'd never considered the film industry. I think coming from the centre of England, theatre was something that we all, you know, loved. We did it at school. It was something that was obtainable, mm-hmm. and you had the West End. Film just didn't register with me until my daughter was nearly 5 years old and got a lead in a TV show. And then she kept being given these wonderful opportunities to be in films. And I would be on set and I would be naturally immersing myself in this environment. But again, in all honesty, didn't register with me that that was possible. Mm-hmm. And then Isabella, my daughter, got offered the opportunity to be in LA. And I was like, wow, this is Hollywood. This is fun for her. Again, mm-hmm. nothing to do with me.
Right.
And I kept being asked on set to help out. They kept seeing me instruct Isabella or kind of have an understanding of what was necessary in a way, you know, producing on a very simple level. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, this is quite fun. Maybe I should do something for my daughter. Mm-hmm. So I produced just a short for her. And it went really well. And it was a very good friend of mine, Sean, said to me, you should be a film director. And I said, how do you do that? And he said, you just say you are. And I thought, okay.
What a ridiculous business we are in.
Yeah. But I would like to make sure that there's a caveat of understanding that this wasn't just that I was some random, I don't know, let's call it a swimming pool maintenance person.
Sure.
Never been involved in any form of industry. You know,
right.
it was a shift, a big shift, but a shift that was within something I understood.
Right, exactly. You've been a theater director for a long time. You've worked with actors for most of your career. So you knew that part. So now all you needed to learn was the technical aspects of things, of actually how to work within the medium of film.
Absolutely. And of course, that is never ending. You never learn everything.
Never.
And so I think that's what gave me the courage to do it, because I thought, well, I don't have to turn up to this job knowing everything. Mm-hmm. I know what I like. I can use my own insight to what I already know. And if I surround myself with incredible, knowledgeable people, then that might work.
My God, that's actually smart and intelligent and logical, as opposed to so many first-time directors who hire first-time DPs, first-time production designers, first-time grips. Like, you're like, why would you do that? Hire people who are smarter than you and have more experience than you so you can learn from them.
Yeah, always. I always surround myself with people that are much, much more intelligent than me.
that is the sign of a good leader and a good director. People who feel more, you feel comfortable in your own skin. You don't have to prove yourself. So that's why you're hiring people who know more than you in their departments, so you can learn from them. And that's why your films come out good.
Definitely. And don't get me wrong, you know, we started with a very basic crew, mm-hmm. of 10 people, and it grew to 35. So everybody learned along the way. I kind of took everybody under my wing and said, do you want to join me for this crazy ride? They did.
Now, speaking of the crazy ride, did you set out to do 6 features, or did it just happen to be that you'd made 6 features in 2 years?
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Again, I was given a great piece of advice that once you shoot your first, move straight on to your next one. And it was the best piece of advice I'd been given, because I'd seen a lot of my friends, mm-hmm. creating their first film and then 2, 3, 4 years later, mm-hmm. deciding to work on another one. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was within 2 months. I thought, yeah, absolutely. Let's make another one. So I did. And then from that one, I naturally found an exec producer who wanted to fund the next one. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, listen, if you're going to give me that amount, I could make 2 for it if you give me a bit more. So I made 2. And then suddenly I was able to make the next one and then the next one. And it's a lot of hard work. And I often laugh because I am absolutely exhausted all the time. But I'm on such a high the whole time that it kind of, you know, outweighs each other.
No, because I know. Look, I've directed a few features myself. I understand the amount of energy it takes to direct a feature film, let alone to prep it, let alone to write it, let alone to do the post on it. Are you done with the first film when you're starting the second? Or are you still kind of in post?
I will say I basically had 6 babies over 2 years. That's how it feels. You know,
you're
birthing a baby every time. No, they did coincide, which again is always fun. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the days I was finishing shooting one film, and the next day I was screening my other two back to back at an ArcLight, and we were finishing them. I really That's do insanity. Put my crew under some pressure.
That's insanity.
I know. But if you don't make yourself accountable, I mean, I do work in extreme conditions, but you know, you make yourself these deadlines and dates. I find that you stick to them.
Well, yeah, when you have no choice like that, absolutely.
Yes, yes. Who wants choice?
I mean. Now, so how did you finance the first one? And tell me the financing strategy behind all 6, because as I'm sure a lot of people are like, where did she find the money for these things, and how did that come about?
Absolutely. Well, the kind of, again, the caveat behind, oh, I got 6 films funded, needs to be taken back to, you know, many, many years ago when I was able to learn the skill of networking, mm-hmm. you know, networking, being around people, being a good person, because what I didn't realize was my films were funded from people that I met just by being a good person 5, 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. maybe even a wee bit longer. Mm-hmm. And not knowing that then, I didn't even know I was going to end up in the industry. So it's very important, I think, that people understand the skills of networking, being a good person, and having a good heart. And that might sound a bit naff, but it's very important that I get that across.
And so then those people financed your, like, you basically went after financing for your first film, and you said, hey, I'm going to make my first feature film. Can you give me some money to make it to somebody?
Well, this was a wonderful lady who actually had been a location for a film that my daughter had been in. Mm-hmm. And they actually really liked the people that had this location, really liked my daughter and myself. Mm-hmm. And I just stayed in contact with her. And then when I thought I was going to do something with Isabella, I remember she'd said if I ever wanted to approach her about something, I should. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I thought I was going to get, you know, about $5,000, which for your first film, I was quite excited by.
Right.
And then she actually said, hold on a minute. No, I want to produce. I've got a story to tell. Do you want to make this? Mm-hmm. And here's a lot of money. And so I did. So my first film was actually funded brilliantly by this wonderful individual. Mm-hmm. And I was able to work with my crew for the first time. But the thing that then got me onto that next one, again, was, okay, I need to make another film. How do I fund that? Mm-hmm. And actually what I did is I approached 6 friends who all had children, who were all proper actors and wanted to be in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you all give me, and myself included, 4 or 5K each, I can make a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
So we put this together. And again, I use the same crew, but I make it a fun experience. So it's an enjoyable thing to be part of. And all the friends and all these wonderful people said, I'll help. I'll be in it. So we shot that film. And from that film, there was someone that said, I believe in what you do and who you are. I'd like to fund a couple more. Mm-hmm. So again, I said, okay, well, instead of just funding this one film for X amount, would you put some more into that? And I'll make 2. And I shot 2 back to back, because I just knew that whilst I had this momentum,
you
have to keep on going.
Yeah.
And then that's what happened with the next one and the next one. So it's really about building that momentum. And that's what I do now. The minute I have something, the minute I'm there, I keep it going, because you never know when it's going to stop.
Now, how many days did you shoot, like, on your first feature?
12 days is what I average, mm-hmm. but I have given myself 15 days if necessary.
On that second feature that you did, when you pulled together all that money, you made it for about $30,000.
That was probably only 8 or 9 days on that one, in all honesty.
Okay, so but even for 30 or 40 grand in that general world, that's still a good amount of time. And how did you do post-production? Did you edit yourself?
No. I have, again, this wonderful team that have been with me, and they all, basically, they all believe in me. Mm-hmm. I seem to have created this wonderful,
I can see that,
confidence, mm-hmm, and trust in what I do. So because they'd seen my first film, and this was my second, and I said there will be more, everybody did it almost as a favor. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still was able to pay them something, but I said, look, by doing this for me, you know I'm going to give you more work. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I could have continued to do that. So it's people believing in you. But, you know, I always say you can never ask for a favor more than once, ever.
Oh, right,
and that was my favor.
Right.
You know, that was the, come on, guys, believe in me. I'm going to make this happen.
And you cashed. So you cashed in that favor and then followed up with more and more work.
Definitely.
And then just built from there.
Yes, definitely. And we have this wonderful little team now that I love and adore, and we're very much like a family.
And then
they work hard.
And you've made six of them. You're already in pre-production for the seventh one?
Well, I'm in pre-production for two. I'm shooting back-to-back in 2 weeks' time.
Of course.
Why wouldn't you be?
You should be shooting right now. You should be shooting right now.
I know. I'm sorry. I'll get my camera out. I could be shooting myself doing this.
I mean, seriously, that's a scene.
I know. I'm letting it down. I'm letting the whole side down. No, those two are very simple features. Mm-hmm. They are being shot over, you know, 5 to 6 days each, one single character. They're very artistic. They're very experimental. I'm working on these two subject matters. One is a death of a child and grief. Mm-hmm. And the other one is your kind of coming of age, being a 15-year-old teenage story. Mm-hmm. So those two I'm shooting in the next couple of weeks. And then after that, I'm actually in the script development. So they've been all developed so far. So I've got six scripts that I will then shoot over the next, I don't know, what shall I give myself?
I say 12 months.
12 to 18 months?
I say 12 to 18 months. I mean,
come
on. All
right, yeah.
I mean, you've been a little bit lazy. I mean, six.
I know.
Let's push yourself a little bit. So
well, I did have a book that came out as well.
Yeah,
I
was going to talk about your book in a little bit. Okay, so what is your writing process for these books? I mean, for these movies?
It's very technical. Very technical. I write a vomit draft.
Okay.
So, again, surrounding myself with excellent people, I seem to have a plethora of ideas. I don't know why. They just come to me, titles, concepts, ideas. I will write a vomit draft, which is a very bad version of a screenplay. And then, again, I've surrounded myself with excellent screenwriters and support. And I find there are certain people that take on those certain scripts. So I have somebody that's currently working on the family comedies. I have someone that's working on, you know, the serious version of something or whatever it is. I have three or four screenwriters that then help and support me.
That's insane what you've been able to do. I mean, it's literally insane. It really, really is. Now, the big question I have for you, distribution plan. It's great to make movies, and a lot of people can make them, but can you make money? Can you sell them? How are you getting your money back? How are you making profit for your investors, and how are you distributing these films?
Okay, so I won't be able to mention exact names, obviously, but I can give you the basic understanding of how I achieved it.
Okay.
So I have my best friend is head of acquisitions at a very large company, and she gave me advice on the stories pre-finalized scripts. Because to me, it's about saying, hold on a minute, what is the element of this story that is going to be interesting for the audience? You know, if this isn't for an audience, do I want to make it? And of course, that's why I'm making my next two. They're very arty. That, you know, they will get some form of distribution, but not the masses. Mm-hmm. So I was able to work out, okay, this is a Christmas script. This is a Halloween story. So in my head, I already had a target audience.
Mm-hmm.
Once I've done that and I've made a script that I believe is suitable to get distributed, I will then find out what those distributors are looking for actor-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I can't get Angelina Jolie in my films at the moment, but who is it that they like? What are they looking at? So I do quite a bit of research behind my ideas. I might sound like I'm crazy and just do it, but I'm quite business-oriented in the kind of the behind-the-scenes aspect. Mm-hmm. And so, again, once that's sorted, I actually don't think about that until I have shot the film. Mm-hmm. I make sure it's the right length, it's got the right characters, I know where it's heading. I will have looked at what other distributors like these kind of movies. And then the world nowadays is so different. I don't have expectations on things being able to get out theatrically unless you have certain elements, you know, that's great, but they don't have to be nowadays.
Right.
So if I make my budgets affordable, then the way the exec producers or financiers get their money back is because it doesn't take very long for those films to recoup that money because of all the various platforms. So each film actually is with a different sales agent, distributor. There's nothing that's the same. And in fact, my next films, every single one has got a different producer behind them. Mm-hmm. Again, enabling me to have a different market, different target audience.
And then basically because you've now proven yourself six times over, it's becoming easier.
Oh my gosh, unbelievably so. Because you have evidence, you have proof of what you've done, proof of concept, proof that you can do it. I'm being asked to direct things now, which is a wonderful position to be in, and movies. Mm-hmm. And also I have that belief in myself. Mm-hmm. I very much believe in earning where you are. And so there is no way that after my first film, I would have been happy going, yes, I know what I'm doing. I needed to earn it. Every single film I've gone through, I've learned through something. I've learned through something that's happened, whether that be a good thing or a bad thing. And in fact, I've written everything down because my book that will be out later this year, Filmmaking Without Fear, Why Not, is based on these six films and very, you know, the truth behind them, because it's not easy. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to make a film today and you just go out and do it. You know, it takes so much effort behind the scenes, which a lot of my, crew might not see or, other people involved. In fact, it's quite amusing when I get a phone call from a friend. Am I seeing that at the cinema? And I'm like, probably not, but that doesn't mean it's not any good, don't think it means that it's worth something.
Sure.
And we have all these platforms now that make everything so much more obtainable for us all.
I mean, there's thousands of movies made a year, only 50 or 100 make it to the theater, if that.
Exactly, if that.
That's insane. Yeah. So basically you are the personification of what I preach. You are the personification of indie film hustle. Without question. I mean, you've basically done everything I preach about. You have a system in place. You keep your budgets low. Mm-hmm. You started smart. You hire people that know more about things than you do. And you start building it. And you're doing it so fast that you have to succeed at a certain point. And you know your marketing. You know your distribution. You know who you're making it for. You're already speaking to the distributors before you make the movie. You're doing everything I've ever preached about on this show.
I'm so pleased about that. I mean, also, one other thing that I think is important, I have surrounded myself by very supportive people that are in the industry. Mm-hmm. Again, I've met them organically. Mm-hmm, I haven't gone out and looked for them. I've gone to film festivals when I first started. I had a nonprofit which enabled me to go to film festivals. And that's where I started to learn everything. And it was after about a year of interviewing these filmmakers that I thought, I know what they're talking about. I understand this. Mm-hmm. So that hard work that went into that enabled me to meet these wonderful people who now support me and mentor me. And I do a lot of mentoring because I believe in giving back. And my next two films, I have some incredible, all ages actually, male, female people that I'm mentoring that are shadowing me.
That's awesome.
really important to me.
That's amazing. And then again, during all of this time, you had time to write a book.
I did. Well, and get a divorce.
Oh,
and you have to throw that in.
Oh, my God. Yeah. On top of it all.
I will say that first film was one of the hardest, most painful times in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I actually think by me working on that film, I got through everything because I could focus on that. Mm-hmm. It was an intense time. It was life changing. And I learned an awful lot about myself.
Now, what is the biggest lesson you learned shooting 6 feature films in 2 years?
Oh, good question. Oh, let's think. The biggest thing I learned. The biggest thing I learned. Oh, my gosh, that's a really good question. I mean, because every time I did something, I learned something. I think it was definitely maybe to have the belief in who I am and what I do. Mm-hmm. Because if you can have that, your team respect you and follow you. And I have a very definite way of running my sets. Mm-hmm. They're very holistic. It's very family oriented. Mm-hmm. I try to be environmentally friendly. I think having set myself the way I do things and having belief in that, mm-hmm. I think that's what I learned was okay to do. And I'm very happy to say it works. And, you know, again, changes can happen.
Of course.
But that belief, I think, in who you are and what you're doing.
Now, what drives you to hustle as hard as you are?
That's a very good question.
I mean, seriously, because people ask me that all the time. They're like, why do you do this? I'm like, I do it because I have to. I have no other choice.
Yeah, I get it. And everyone's going to have a different answer. I mean, there's a deep psychological reason behind it, as well as a much simpler reason. And the deeper psychological reason is that I feel, due to various experiences in my life with various fathers and things that have happened to me and mm-hmm. friends, mm-hmm. that I needed to prove myself. Mm-hmm. And that was that can be a negative thing if you're doing it for other people. So that was I was able to shift that over time to know that I do it for myself. And I like to prove to myself that I say I'm going to do something, I do it, that I have learned something new. So there's this innate belief system in me that says, if someone says you can't do it, and including, you know, sometimes your own self-doubts, makes me want to do it even more. I love this conversation. I love the fact that I can sit here and say, I did that. Everybody mm-hmm. said it wasn't possible. They say it's not possible to me every single day. Mm-hmm. I hustle and say, I've got this and I'm going to do that. And someone will say, oh, but you haven't. I say, no, but I will have. Don't worry about it. And it's that proving to myself.
You know, it's fascinating because it's, you know, I haven't met many people like you in the business. because you remind me a lot of what I do, because I'm crazy like you mm-hmm. and doing what we do. And I want to ask you the question, because I've had this happen to me so many times with people in the industry. When you tell them you're going to do something that they tell you is impossible, do you see the look in their eyes? It's kind of like a glazing over that they cannot comprehend what you're achieving or what you're doing.
Yeah. In fact, somebody last night questioned the amount that I make a movie for. Mm-hmm. And of course, I get that. But for me, it's about everybody has their own Hollywoods. Mm-hmm. And so I think people immediately go to a place that they, this can't be made because, or be done because it needs theatrical release and because it needs this amount of money and because you need this star. We all have the ability to make our own Hollywoods. For me, the passion every morning is getting up, writing, creating, knowing that I'm going to get a group of people together to make something that could maybe make a difference in someone's life. Whether that's even just to make them smile and mm-hmm. laugh, it doesn't matter. That's what drives me. And so, yes, there's definitely a lot of people that look at me and say, oh, that's impossible. That's ridiculous. You can't just go to a film festival and meet an investor. And I'm very much with the belief of the universe and putting things out there.
Yes.
And the minute I verbally say something,
yes,
then I've put it out there. So mm-hmm. it has to happen now. But I'm not someone that says things that aren't going to happen.
Right, exactly. You're like, I'm going to go win an Oscar, which is yeah. a horrible goal to go after.
Well, I think if that's your only goal,
then
you've lost the reason to do it.
Correct.
I would like to have the highest accolade possible.
Amen.
But not for the accolade, but more because I've made something that has really affected
millions of people.
Exactly. So that's why I'd like, it's just a posh film festival. But it happens to be the most famous film festival in the world.
Right.
But, you know, that's a goal, again, it's why are you aiming for this? We have to have the right reasons yes. for why we're aiming for doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I've been able to do what I've done, because my sincerity behind it and my belief system behind it and the way I'm doing it is so far so good.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
I think that one of the reasons for your success is that you're one of the, you're something that is very rare in this town. You're genuine.
Oh,
you're genuine.
Thank you. But, I like that.
But
word.
You could hear it in your, we've never met in person, but I could hear it in your voice. I could hear it in the passion behind it. And it's real. And you know as well as I do, in this town, that is rare. You
yes.
do not meet people who are genuine. And then when people do meet people who are genuine, honest, real, coming from a good place with good intentions, they want to help you, because hopefully I feel that at least in this business, there are good people who really do want to do good work and help people. And you attract those people to you by the energy you put out.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And that energy is huge, because someone said to me, I think again yesterday or the day before, they said, gosh, you're a very happy person, aren't you? Because even if I'm not feeling happy or something's not good, I will always default to that feeling and that emotion.
Sure.
Because that is what I'm very privileged. I've worked my way to get here, but mm-hmm. I am hustling the streets of Hollywood, making films. I remember actually going to a festival and someone said to me, so what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a director. Mm-hmm. No, but what do you actually do? I said, no, I'm a director. So I feel very privileged
right.
that I'm allowed to say that and be that
right.
and work at this.
Exactly. You're not a director who does Uber on the side. You're a director.
No, I'm not. I feel very lucky.
Yeah.
But I will say again, I make that happen. I'm very frugal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't live a lifestyle that maybe other people would like to live mm-hmm. if they mm-hmm. earn that money. I'm mm-hmm. very savvy with it. I mm-hmm. think, okay, I need to put this into the next project.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to make this work?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we all have different ways of living and doing things, and this happens to suit me. Again, it would not suit everybody
right.
at all.
You gotta find what works for you. And again, a lot of people want to fit the Hollywood system of making
yes.
movies, or this kind of director's way of making movies, or this kind of director's way of making movies. All the very successful directors who are in our world, in the indie world, they find a way to make movies the way that they can make them and make them happy doing so.
Yes.
Like the Duplass brothers, like Joe Swanberg, like Lynn Shelton,
yes.
Like Kevin Smith or Richard Linklater, all these guys, or Robert Rodriguez, they found their way of making it, and they're not trying to insert the Hollywood system. Because if you talk to someone in the Hollywood system, you're a lunatic. you're a lunatic. I'm a lunatic. You're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, make a movie for $5,000, it's going to look like something you shot on a home video. But they can't
yes.
grasp the concept that, like, no, you can make a movie for a certain budget if you know what you're doing. And you can tell a story. At the end of the day.
Yes. And that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about telling a good story.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. We all know that that's what makes a film. Because even those massive budgets, if they've not got a good story, no one sits there and goes, yeah, but the camera was excellent, wasn't it? Or the quality of the lighting worked.
Oh.
You know, like, well, that was
a CG
crap story.
The CG was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. The
Basically,
story is imperative.
Yeah, absolutely. As the almost the entire DC Universe has proven to us.
I'm not going to comment. I will.
Only one of them is good, and other than the Batman movies, original Batman movies that Nolan did, and Wonder Woman. Other than that, just horrible. Anyway, all right. So I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all of my guests. What advice would you give a filmmaker wanting to break into the business today?
So, and they haven't done anything. This is something that they'd like to do.
Yep.
Okay. I would, first of all, do as much research as possible. And that means going to film festivals, going to the markets, finding out about the behind the scenes of filmmaking, because I think that's quite hidden. Mm-hmm. And for you to interview and ask and talk and research for as much information as you can on what it is that filmmaking is, not about the cameras or the equipments or the styles, none of that yet. It's the background information behind, what a film needs to have, what a film is about. Because I went to the Cannes Film Market for many moons ago with my daughter, actually had a film there. And I'll never forget that day of walking into the marketplace and going, oh my God, there's a film with Sharon Stone in and that can't sell. This is like, what?
Yep.
So having that expectation and realization of what it really is about, that's what I would do first.
Okay. Now, can you tell me what book had the biggest impact on your life or career?
Oh, gosh. I think actually nothing to do with film or drama.
Sure.
I'd say a lot of the Malcolm Gladwell books.
Okay.
I love the way that you have to have had 10,000 hours before you become an expert.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that it's all about who you surround yourself with. I'd say the Malcolm Gladwell, any of his. And actually, I also do like he's called Ken, and he wrote a book about education. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point, I think it's Ken Livingstone, but that's, I think, also might be my ex mayor of London. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, he wrote a book about how education has an impact. So for me, that actually helped me bring up my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I do things very differently. She writes screenplays with me. We have mother and daughter entertainment together.
Mm-hmm.
She's only 15 and a half. And to me, it was about creating something bigger than the norm, what everybody does, and going to school. So I think Malcolm Gladwell and Ken something or other. I'll remember it. We'll put it on your blog.
Oh, yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. Now, what lesson took you the longest to learn, whether in the film industry or in life?
Cool, you've got good questions.
Thank you.
I wish you'd send them to me previously.
I don't often want to hear what you think.
I know. Okay, a lesson. Well, I have to say, I am always learning. And I would say that even yesterday and the day before and today, I've learned a new lesson. One of the most recent ones was about my words, actually, really thinking about how a word has an impact on somebody. Mm-hmm. That's in life as well as on a script.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's quite a good lesson. I wish I'd learned maybe 30 years ago.
You tell me about it.
Yeah.
Now, what are three of your favorite films of all time?
Oh, well, you're going to laugh.
No, okay. Go for it.
So, Gone with the Wind.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Probably it's a difficult one between Sound of Music, Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but I like all of those.
Why does all of those make sense? I have no idea.
Yeah. They are wonderful. And then I would also say, I probably like Midnight in Paris.
That is a good movie. I love that
movie. Yeah, do you know, because I just love that era. And then, I know you said only three,
but I do
like all the old Gérard Depardieu movies. They really affected me growing up.
Oh,
Manon cool. des Sources and Cyrano de Bergerac. Yes, I loved those.
Awesome, awesome. Now, Elizabeth, where can people find you online?
Online, I was going to say, in Hollywood, I'm everywhere.
Yeah, where are you right now?
Yeah, right now, exactly. Sunset Boulevard, actually.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I have an Instagram, at Elizabeth_B_T. Mm-hmm. I have a Facebook, Elizabeth Blake Thomas. Mm-hmm. My website, elizabethblakethomas.com. Mother and Daughter Entertainment, and all my details are there as well.
Fantastic. And I'll put all those links in the show notes. Elizabeth, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. You are an inspiration. Hopefully you've given a lot of inspiration to the tribe to prove that you can do it and not to be afraid of doing it.
Well, I'm very, very grateful that you invited me on. I really, really am. And thank you. And if anybody ever needs any help, they can just contact me. I'm always available.
Be careful what you wish for.
Thanks, Alex.
I'd like to first thank Elizabeth for literally doing the podcast on the streets of Hollywood while she's hustling between meetings. That is what I call an indie film hustler. So thank you so, so much, Elizabeth, for not only sharing your story, but sharing the inspiration that anyone can go out there and do it. If you're willing to put in the work and educate yourself, surround yourself with good people, you can make it happen. Every single filmmaker, even the biggest ones in the world, all started out just like you and me, with a small indie film, small project, and got their feet wet. So don't put obstacles in front of yourself. As the famous quote says, if you don't have the best of everything, you need to make the best of everything. Never give up, never surrender, just keep on hustling. I'd also like to thank our new sponsor, Streamlit.com. Now, if you're selling your film on Amazon Prime and noticing that you're not getting a whole lot of cash for it nowadays, think about also putting it on Streamlit. It is a SVOD platform, a subscription-based platform where your movie will not be buried. It's free to submit and has a royalty rate 3 times as much as Amazon, so you get to keep all the rights. So if you want to submit your film today, go to streamlet.com. That's StreamLett.com. And I'll leave links to it in the show notes. And those show notes are bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/124 for links to Elizabeth and everything we talked about in this episode. And if you haven't already, subscribe and leave a good review for the show. It really helps us out a lot. Thank you again so much for listening, guys. As always, keep on writing no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.